Adoption Arena podcast is brought to you by AdoptionArena.com, a sound pathway into a great future. Thank you so much for joining us today on Adoption Arena podcast. We are speaking to Jamie Beadlehole, who's the other half of the Daddy and Daddy award-winning blog. Let's just go back to, first of all, look at, you know, people who don't know your blog. You've won so many awards. For example, you're awarded the top 25 UK adoption blog, the Brilliance in Blogging win in 2019, the Online Influence Awards in 2019. You've worked with clients like M&S, Disney, George and eBay. You have over 40,700 followers. Let's just go right back to the beginning.
Yeah.
Of that moment when you decided you wanted to adopt. Can you take our viewers just very briefly? How did you start this incredible journey that's led to so many followers, so much acclaim, so much passion to get your story out there? Let's start at the beginning. How did it all start?
So Tom and I, my fiance Tom and I, met when we were at uni in year 2001, and we've been together for almost 20 years. And after about 10 years together, we'd moved in together, we bought our first house, our relationship developed. But the thing that was missing for us, or the next step for us, was starting a family. So we started talking about starting a family probably in about 2010, after we'd been together almost a decade. And around about that time, we had spent a lot of time with our two little nephews, Samuel and Finley. And Tom's sister, Katie, had separated from her husband, and she actually moved abroad with her boys, which left basically a two-boy-sized void in Tom and I's life. And we really missed them, although we still keep in touch and see them regularly. So basically, we knew we had that kind of dynamic, potentially as a family with two children. And so when we started looking into the different routes to becoming a family, adoption really stood out for us, because there were so many sibling groups in the care system who were hard to place with families and waiting for their forever family. So after a little bit of research about adoption, really our decision was made. Mm-hmm. And we started the adoption process in 2012. And the process in its entirety took about 2 years. The first stage of the process, where we were assessed and went for approval and trained and all that various assessment stuff, took just over a year, and then the family finding part of the process took a little bit longer for us than it might ordinarily take.
Because generally now, because obviously I met you as well, to people watching this, I met you earlier this year through the You Can Adopt amazing national UK campaign that's seen
wonderful.
It's been really, really wonderful. And you were brought into very much to share your story, because I know that there was one of the facts that, you know, we were all given facts and roles to do. And you were there to support the fact that over a quarter of the LGBT community do not know that they're eligible to adopt. So were you surprised, you know, just to go back to, you know, how we met, were you surprised when you actually read that stat that so many people, you know, in that community just don't know?
No, not really, because there's so many misconceptions about adoption. And, you know, I think young gay people generally take a little bit longer to settle into relationships and that part of their life. So it doesn't surprise me particularly that, you know, a lot of gay people may not have considered adoption yet or know a lot about it. But that was one of our, and always has been really, one of our missions for Tom and I, as we're quite a success story with our children. And we've had a real magical experience of adoption, really, to get the message out to the LGBT community that it is a really fantastic way to start a family. And, you know, you are eligible to start a family via adoption, even if you're single. You know, you don't need a huge amount of money, and all those kind of issues that affect the LGBT community don't necessarily need to be a hurdle in the process of adopting, you know. The You Can Adopt campaign was really important for us to become involved with, because it's such a big platform.
Yeah, it's just been brilliant, hasn't it? Already we know the statistics that interest in adoption is up in some areas 6% in the UK just from this campaign, just from, you know, just from September, which is crazy sort of numbers, which means that that's obviously going to feed into so much more, so many more children starting that process. I mean, yes. When you, because I know that was one of the driving forces behind you starting the blog, was the fact that you felt so many people were asking you questions, wasn't it, about the process. I mean, what was the moment when you thought, we need to document this? Was there a real moment when you thought, we want to tell our story as we live it, rather than after, you know, rather than years later? Was that, you know, how did you want to continue that conversation?
Yeah, so basically during the process, during the assessment process, when Tom and I were being assessed to become parents, we were looking for kind of real life examples of adoption and what it looks like and what it might feel like, you know, and the kind of emotional side of things, because the adoption agencies, however amazing they are, the literature and kind of things that they're able to provide you with are quite corporate and don't have a huge amount of feeling or realism to them. You know, there's a lot of stats and there's a lot of information about worst case scenarios and what you can expect to prepare for, but there wasn't very much in terms of like real life examples of families that might look like ours.
That's something I really love about your blog. Remember when we spoke before, you said that you actually have already trained in blogging, you actually knew a little bit about it. So that helped you, you know, set it up. I mean, what would you say to any families maybe inspired by your story and wanting to actually set up? Would you say just start, or, you know, what would you say to people or families?
Well, you know, when we first started the blog, basically to fill that void so other families, potential adoptive families, do have an example of what it's actually like for us. We thought about writing a book, and we thought about perhaps doing a video vlog or a YouTube channel. But because I was already working as a digital marketing manager, I was looking after blogs that belong to brands. So I already had that skill. So I basically felt like starting a blog would be really accessible because people can access it from any device or wherever they are, as long as they're connected to the internet. Or if you're like my mum and dad, you can print it out, you know, and read it.
That's beautiful.
You know, my advice, I guess, to other families, because I do think there needs to be more family blogs from adoptive families, because of course our experience is quite personal and it might not necessarily represent the experience that broadly everybody will have. Ours, of course, very much talks about adopting siblings and the challenges involved with having two or three or more children at once and also being a same-sex couple. Whereas, you know, we'd love to see more examples of blogs from families of all different colours and sizes and shapes, you know.
Yeah.
I would say...
One thing that you did say was that you didn't use your children's names, you know.
Exactly. I'll come on to that in a moment. But I guess my advice to a family that wants to start blogging about their experience would be to start really basic. So the Daddy and Dad website, as you see it now, has been through several years of development and investment. But in the very early days, actually, we focused a lot less on the design of it and how it looked, but much more on the content and making sure that it was written and really easy to read and easy to identify with. We basically wanted it to be a really easy read so that other couples or single people who were thinking of adoption could get a really easy feel for how it felt. So I guess my advice to people starting a new blog would be to not focus too much on how it looks, but to really focus on how you are writing and how it will be read by the people. And then, of course, as it becomes popular and you receive comments and followers and readers, that's the stage which you start developing the design and style of it. But yeah, we, like you say, we did keep, and we do keep, the children's identity private. So we don't use their real names. When we're out and about, perhaps doing some kind of social media PR event or anything like that, like the filming we did with you, Joy, at the You Can Adopt, we never put any content up live where we are. We like to make sure we schedule stuff, you know, so that our location and whereabouts are secure. And there's quite a few hints and tips like that that you can find online for keeping your family safe. But also in the first 3 or 4 years even, we didn't put any family photographs up or pictures of the kids either. We felt like we should probably wait until they grew up and their characteristics changed significantly before we started featuring family photographs on Instagram and stuff.
Yeah, which is interesting actually, because it was almost really successful from the beginning, wasn't it? People were so hungry, you know, when we chatted. You said that people jumped on it, and that I think is very much talked about, probably the quality of what you were saying, and also just the real time. People want real stories, not a sort of a textbook, highly researched, you know, stereotypical kind of a thing. People want real-time experiences, and that spoke for itself. That's something I really like about your blog, is it's lively. You know, if you want to spend time on the page, you can. If you want just a quick one-minute look, you've got it. It's really lovely and easy to navigate around.
We wanted it to read a bit like a Hannah Fielding or a Dawn French novel. So, and so I basically binged books by female authors before I started writing this book.
Ah, that's a great tip.
Yeah, what I really wanted people to... I wanted it to have more of an appeal, so that basically the message could reach people necessarily that hadn't considered adoption or even becoming a parent yet. So I wanted the way it read to be really easy to get into and funny. Which is why I don't shy away either from any of the dirty, horrible bits. I keep all the nosebleeds and squabbles and everything in. basically because I want it to appeal to a broad audience. Yeah, and that's worked actually. Yeah. It picked up a lot of readers quite quickly. Yeah. And
I absolutely love, because I think the other thing is let's face it, having children is hard work, isn't it? You know, I mean, I think it was, obviously I'm a comedian, and I love the line that Jack D said, at the end of the day, children cost you £20,000 each, and they slag you up at parties after the age of 18. That's the deal, you know. It's gonna be warts and all. And as you said, not every single issue is an adoption-based issue. Sometimes they're just kids being kids, and that's what I really love, is you haven't tried to sort of make it all about the traumatic, even though they did go through a lot of experiences, obviously, as all adoptions do. All children will have things from their other existence or other lives. But you very much incorporated that and still enjoyed that whole parenthood mix of just, you know, of the impact, as I said, suddenly these children arrive and you've now got to become parents. So it's really important, and I like that very much.
Thank you.
So is there anything that you wouldn't talk about on your blog? Anything that you think we will never discuss? Obviously the identities, but have you ever been asked by an interviewer, obviously I'm not going to do it, but anything you think, I'm really not, that's taboo, we're not going to talk about that?
Yes, there is. And basically anything that, any memories or experiences that belong to the children before they were placed with us, that's their information for them. That's their story for them to keep and to share. So we don't tend to talk at all about the boys' beginnings, about where they came from or their experiences in the foster care system and beyond. We generally speak about the experiences we've had with the boys from day one when they moved in. But we also talk at length about the adoption process. Basically, Tom and I talk about our experience and not necessarily the children. That's not to say we don't talk briefly about things like their earliest memories and keeping their sort of heritage alive, and talking to them about their beginnings. That's something that we do mention and discuss. But it's more kind of conceptual, in that we believe that the children should be proud of their adopted heritage. So, but yes, we don't tend to talk about the kids' background in detail at all. So we start the blog basically on day one. So meeting the boys in their foster care setting, sitting around the table with them, playing with their toys, and introducing ourselves to them. And then really the blog just continues from there, and we, you know, account our experiences. And it's really good for us to read back on as well, because life is just such a whirlwind that it's so easy to forget where we came from and how our family sort of has developed.
Which I absolutely love. Absolutely love that. You know, that it's also sort of a way of literally sort of documenting your journey. So you can look back and go, you know what, that was a problem then, but now we've overcome that as a family, and then we're moving into new phases, new experiences, new horizons. And that's something I think is really important. Because even as I said, even if you just start a blog just for yourself and maybe for a few family members, these very early journey steps down while it's fresh, rather than having to think, okay, 10 years later, let's go back. So that could be quite useful for somebody watching if they wanted to just start it for friends and family.
Yeah, and also particularly thinking about adoption blogs. Adoption is a really, really, really overwhelming process for a person to go through. And I'm not saying that in like a really scary sense. It's just probably the biggest thing you'll ever do. And so to have the ability to write it all down as you go along is really therapeutic. And, you know, I think it's rescued me from several sleepless nights, the fact that I'd sat there with a glass of wine in the evening and actually typed it all out. And I would recommend it, you know, blogging as a, even if you're new to writing, which I wasn't thankfully, but even if you're new to writing, there's no expectations of a blogger. And in fact, I think some of the best blogs I've ever read are from real humble people that don't write for a living, because you get a real sense that they're laying their lives bare for you to read. You know, which in a way is how ours started, because right at the beginning we had no illusion that it would ever become what it is today. Daddy and Dad blog really started as a way to keep my parents and the grandparents and our friends and family informed about how we're getting on in the process. But of course, because there was this huge void of information like it out there, it grew a big audience quite fast.
What would you say to young people adopting as well? Because we know that, you know, I know you were quite, you're sort of, I think you said you were in the early 30s when you decided to adopt. Why Yes. do you think not more young couples are adopting? I mean, I know you briefly said about, you know, the gay community, but why generally do you think more young people aren't getting involved with adoption who are in a couple?
Well, I guess heterosexual couples biologically probably want to have their own children biologically first. I don't suppose they start thinking about adoption if there's that feeling that they can have biological children themselves. And I'm probably talking about people in their 20s here. But gay couples, I think, looking at the kind of network we have of followers and readers and friends online, I do think there is generally a growing appeal among younger gay couples. And also, you know, the stereotype that gay people are kind of party animals and it really enjoy the single life, it's quite an old misconception about what gay people are actually like. And, you know, a lot of LGBTQ younger people, I think, will start becoming adopted parents a bit sooner. But of course, there is also an expectation that you have a house or at least an accommodation with a spare bedroom and that kind of thing that I guess you don't necessarily achieve until you're a little bit older.
That's very true, especially with house price and everything, as we know, going up and all the craziness, especially with COVID and all the other things that are going on, which again is also really interesting as well, because obviously I know COVID has affected you as all families. I suppose that's why I guess people are also finding blogs and podcasts and stuff, because it's a way of communicating and not being so isolated as well. I guess that's really important. I mean, have you had lots of people maybe struggling? I mean, do you know of any adopted families maybe who are struggling or have actually maybe had to, you know, go through difficult times because of adoption?
Thinking about COVID and this year, particularly with lockdown, I think new adoptive families may be struggling because it's already such a huge change in your life to be placed with children in your home and to be working through all the issues that adopted children arrive with. But then to be sort of housed together in such close proximity without being able to see your network of friends and family must be quite difficult. But I guess because Tom and I have been a family with Lyle and Richard for like 7 years, and we've both worked from home for quite a long time, we actually felt like we coped okay, significantly better than we thought we would do during 2020. You know, it's very difficult, isn't it, to see it from somebody else's perspective. But what you say about the fact that podcasts and blogs are generally becoming more popular this year, I don't think that's any coincidence. I do think that people, as they're at home more, they're not going out to the pub or to their usual dance classes or going out and doing their ordinary social life, do have a lot more time to spend reading and listening. Mm-hmm. And it's been, I think it's a real positive thing, mm-hmm. the fact that people are reading other people's experiences and taking inspiration from them.
Totally, I think it's very cathartic. I mean, that's something that I've really loved about this, the COVID thing. I mean, we know it's horrendous, but the flip side of it is we've all got a chance to reset our lives and to really think about what actually really matters going forward and how we actually want to live life. You know, do you want to have children? Do you want to have more children? What does family mean to people. And that's one thing I think is really exciting. I mean, I know lots of families who have got their own biological children, but are now thinking we could adopt, because there is actually still a massive need, isn't there, for children in the UK and also in the world. Many children are without parents. So if you have got that capacity to actually take a child in, there's lots of amazing stories now that are coming in, are coming out all the time, to make you feel that a family doesn't just have to be your own children anymore, does it? We can, you know, have different colours, different races in our family units. And that's very normal in other countries. It's only really in the UK we've got this kind of, in the Western world, we have a cellular mentality of what a family should look like. But now things, those boundaries are beginning to expand, and we're seeing more diversity, especially with the You Can Adopt campaign. We've seen that diversity of types of families that are now possible, which could become, I believe, the new normal moving forward. Yeah. So, I mean, is there anything that, I mean, we know that the speed of adoption has, that's one thing that they really wanted to, you know, that has been talked about, that has changed now. I mean, you said it took about a year for you to actually be approved. Did you find any of that intrusive?
Yeah, well, it's funny because the mindset you have when you enter the process is different to the mindset you have after it. So at the very beginning, when our social worker started visiting us at home to basically assess us as a couple for adoption, we did find the questions that she had and the generally the kind of approach intrusive, but only at the very beginning. And it actually became quite therapeutic after a few meetings, because Tom and I realised actually we haven't really ever had this opportunity to talk about our relationship to somebody else before. And our social worker was really warm and lovely and really well organised. And the questions she asked, and social workers ask, they're sensitive. They're not really intrusive, but it's just you are expected to be a lot more open and honest than you may have been with somebody else before. But as you sort of like warm into the process a little bit, like I said, it becomes quite therapeutic. And there were actually stages where, for instance, this one particular stage of the assessment process, and by the way, the assessment process is subjective, so it's different, it can be different from one person to another. Yeah. But generally speaking, they're trying to assess how, resilient the applicants are. So one of the stages of the process was to list on a timeline all the various experiences you've had in your life that were traumatic, or on the other hand, particularly really, really positive. And so Tom and I did this completely independently without speaking to one another, because we just knew that we'd end up, because we'd been together so long, we'd end up with exactly the same things. So we went right back to the beginning and talked about bullying and deaths in the family and financial troubles and all sorts of different things. And actually then when we talked about these timelines with our social worker, we realized, Tom and I, that we'd been through completely different traumas and different things. And actually, comparing the two of our stories, I'd probably come off significantly worse than Tom, mm-hmm. which was quite a surprise. And actually, that part of the process then was a real eye-opener to me and Tom. And we realised, actually, we've overcome loads more than we ever thought we had.
What I love about, again, you know, is what I love about your work and your blog and everything, because I think we've always seen this kind of chocolate box image of adoption, you know, this perfect family with no real problems, and they're getting this beautiful child as like a gift and a present, and it's just not true, isn't it? It's when you actually stop, like maybe during COVID, everyone's thought, you know what, we've actually been, most people have been through an awful lot of difficult things in their lives. But I'm learning more and more that it's actually what you go through that makes you actually who you're going to become. So, maybe because you've been through all that stuff together, you were actually thinking, actually, now we're ready to actually go through. We know that there will be issues with our children, but we're actually ready. We've got that foundation. So did you find that has actually really helped you moving forward?
Yes, and you know what? I think when the social workers and adoption agencies are assessing couples or single people as potential adopters, what they're really looking for is to show that you've been through and overcome challenges in your past, because children that you potentially could adopt are going to have issues and challenges, and they want to see that you've overcome challenges before and explore how you maybe mentally got through them, or maybe you haven't yet, you know, and that kind of thing. And I do think that's really, really, really important. And, you know, one of the key qualities of any adoptive parent is resilience, isn't it? And that's because, you know, you're going to be placed with children that are going to be difficult.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be easy. And thankfully, you know, I do think actually all these challenges, homophobia, all this other stuff that I've dealt with as a child and growing up, have actually built foundations that are pretty strong, like you say.
Is there anything that you'd like to change in the adoption field? Obviously, we know that the government is now looking to change the speed up times of adoption, the social workers, everyone's looking to really look at new ways to work with different types of families, diversity. Is there anything that you'd like to see them, you know, maybe change, you know, for the gay community, or just generally you'd like to see, I'd like them to look at this?
Yeah, I still think, even though the adoption process has been streamlined, which speeds up basically the process between when you apply and when you're approved to become parents. It doesn't necessarily speed up the family finding bit, because yeah, that just takes a long time.
Yeah, it is what it is, yeah.
And they have sped that up. And actually, I was an independent panel member for the last 18 months or so, and I've experienced that myself. Things are a little bit more less complicated now, but it's still a really complex process. And I don't also know whether the process of preparing children that are in care for adoption and the process of preparing adults to become parents marry up particularly well. Like, I still think there's probably quite a few administrative sort of crossovers that conflict between the two processes, and we experienced that with our boys as well, which really dragged out the stage between where we were matched with them and when we were placed with them, if you see what I mean. That we really had to sit and wait patiently, well, for months and months and months and months, while these two parties sort of conflicted with each other. And I don't think we're the worst case either. I think that happens to a lot of people.
Most people. I mean, a lot of people that I speak to, I very rarely, maybe a handful of times, spoken to people who said the whole thing was great and we moved through really quickly. And that's one of the things that I really want to stress for people wanting to adopt, is that be strong in yourself as well, you know, because the journey ahead is not like, even though you're doing such a wonderful and good thing, you've got to be ready for the next mountain, which is the adoption mountain. It's a mountain all of its own, isn't it? It's like a mountain. And you've already gone through loads of life mountains, maybe IVF, you know, that was another thing, failed IVF, all these other issues, but, you know, miscarriages. There's lots of reasons why people might adopt a child, but you've got to be ready for the mountain that is to come.
And you've got to persevere as well. Like, several times during our adoption process, albeit quite a long time ago now, I've really got to think back actually when I talk about the process, but we felt like, a bit like when you're buying a house, you sort of feel as though there's a lot of stuff going on in the background that could be happening a bit more quickly. And so we found like we had to really persevere with communication between our adoption agency and the local authority that the children were being prepared by, were being looked after by. We didn't just sit passively and wait. You know, you have to really be prepared to persevere and you know, push things along more, because they're obviously very busy.
Yeah, people lose information. I hear that from my parents all the time. They lose a file, or they're just sitting, they've got caseloads like this. And, you know, you are just at the bottom. So you've got to be proactive and go for it. You can't just be like, this has now been 8 months or another year goes by. Then they lose the file, or they miss the appointment themselves. I've heard that. So as you said, it really is proactivity, isn't it? And keeping your eye fixed on why you're doing it.
You're in charge, basically. Even though other people are assessing you and looking after all the children and that side of things, you're kind of in charge, basically, of it. Mm-hmm. You know, and the adoption agencies, on the other hand, are, and we went with an amazing adoption agency, and our social worker was just fantastic, so warm and kind, like I mentioned, and so well organised that she would sort of act on our behalf through difficult times of the process, which was fantastic, because the local authorities are a mixed bag. Some of them are really well organised and very well funded. Some of them aren't as good. We were unlucky with ours, but I know other people have had really good experiences with theirs. But you do have to you know, build a really good relationship with your social worker and be in charge of the process and know what's going on.
Is there just one piece of, is there one piece of advice you'd like to give to a potential adopter? You know, if I'm, you know, what is there one thing you'd like to say? You know, one sentence that you think this is what we're about.
Yeah, I guess my one huge piece of advice to people who have even an inkling that they might like to adopt children is to start gathering information, because the more information you have, the more you go into this adventure with kind of prepared, basically well prepared. And so one piece of advice I would give to people is to look for information. Start by Googling your local adoption agencies, or you can go to the UCAN Adopt website. I know that also has an adoption agency finder tool in there, and give them a ring, and they're more than open to answer any questions, however stupid you might think they are, without any obligation to continue with the process if you don't like what you're hearing, you know. But it's a really, really good way to prepare yourself and to really get all the information you need to go into the process with all the knowledge that you need.
Mm-hmm. So just finally, you know, sort of summing up, obviously, you know, this has been an unprecedented time, you know, all the journey from when you started that first thought in 2012 to, you know, to where we are in 2020. What does, you know, is what would you like to see happen now moving forward? You know, if I could wave a magic wand, I mean, I know I've looked on your website, I know you want a car. I know you want the, you know, the Lamborghini or whatever. We all do. I'm in that queue.
Well, that was just me doing
You're out there. We know where that spider car is going. I love those cars. So now, what would you like to see? Is it a book? Obviously, it's a film. You know, where do you? Is there something which you really feel you'd like to achieve or do?
In terms of the Daddy and Dad story, and our blog and career, you know, there's so many doors open to us that it's just really deciding where I want to take it. But I mean, I have been in discussions with a few people about potentially a book deal, although I can't really say much about it right now. You know, and it would be lovely to get the story out anyway, really, on any channel, but a film would be amazing. I of course, it's all hypothetical right now. I'm going to continue the blog in the meantime, because it's just something that I enjoy, and not to mention it's my full-time job as well. In terms of our family and the immediate future, we adopted the boys while we're living here in our current family home, which basically Tom and I bought when we were about 25. And so we're breaking through the walls because it's not big enough. And the kids are huge now. They're growing at such a pace. So we're moving house, which is a really, really big deal for the kids, of course, because it's going to be the first time they've moved with a family.
That's beautiful.
And it's really lovely, and they've been able to get involved with the house hunting. You know, we've taken them to view houses, and they've dashed upstairs and explored all the bedrooms.
It's been really cathartic as well, because especially if you've been in foster care, you know, I can imagine you've always been moving in a horrible place, being shuffled from one temporary place to the next. So they must be absolutely out of their mind with excitement.
They're very excited, although they're being very cool about it. Because one of the things that, because we're actually moving to a new city, and a whole new region of the country, actually. So the boys are going to have to go to a new school and make new friends and all that kind of thing. But they're really brave about it. You know, they seem like they're on board and they're excited. And I think that's because we've involved them, you know, with the house moving process and finding a house and stuff. So that's coming up early next year. We're hoping to go on holiday as well, because we've been cooped up at home for like a whole year now. And we love to travel with the boys and experience new things together. You know, one of the things Tom and I decided right in the early days when we first adopted the boys was that we'll just take them everywhere with us. We're not going to depend on anybody else. We want all these experiences as a family. So, like, we've always taken them shopping, to the pub, restaurants, everywhere with us, basically. And so holidays are really important for us. So we just, you know, we're optimistic about next year. This year's been a bit of a write-off, but next year should be good.
Listen, I know whatever you do is just going to be amazing, because you know, you have to sort of make your own fun. I'm a big believer in you make your own joy and you can get through anything, you know. And it sounds, and that's why I love you guys, because being in a forever family is what you need. But, you know, no matter what's going on around you, if you've got that hope and that joy and that passion at home, you can just conquer no matter what storms are riding. And that's why I know adoption works, you know adoption works, and yeah. You know, your children are going to get those difficulties, and also just the joy of being in a family and as they develop. So I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time. Is there anything else you'd like to add to say before we wrap it up?
No, just thank you ever so much for having me. This has been really lovely to chat to you. And basically, I'd like everybody to visit our website, which is daddyanddad.co.uk. We're also on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, Daddy and Dad. In fact, if you just Google Daddy and Dad, we come up as the top results with all our various social media pages and blog.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Oh, and I remember, I just want to end with a quote that you gave me last time, and you said, one of your goals is to persuade one more person to adopt. You feel you've done your job. And I just love that. Just one more person. So if you're listening and you are that one more person, you know, do go and check out the Daddy and Daddy blog. You know, no matter where you stand with your in your life, whether you're a young person or you're you're not going to adopt, because information is really key, because you might be talking to somebody who was thinking about it, and then you'll know what to say and why it's important. So I think it's important for even people who have no interest in adoption. You might know a friend who's an adoptee, and information is key, because that's how we're going to build a new community. So thank you again, and thank you for watching. And this is the Adoption Arena podcast. We're here every single week with amazing guests who are innovators, who are pioneers, who are making a big difference to the adoption scene.